The Italian Wine Podcast is the community-driven platform for Italian wine geeks around the world. Support the show by donating at italianwinepodcast.com. Donate 5 or more euros and we'll send you a copy of our latest book, My Italian Grape Geek Journal, absolutely free. To get your free copy of My Italian Grape Geek Journal, click support us at italianwinepodcast.com or wherever you get your pods. Grazie mille.
Welcome to Wine, Food and Travel with me, Mark Millen, on Italian Wine Podcast. Listen in as we journey to some of Italy's most beautiful places in the company of those who know them best, the families who grow grapes and make fabulous wines. Through their stories, we will learn not just about their wines, but also about their ways of life, the local and regional foods and specialities that pair naturally with their wines, and the most beautiful places to visit. We have a wonderful journey of discovery ahead of us, and I hope you will join me. Welcome to Wine, Food and Travel with me, Mark Millen, on Italian Wine Podcast. Today we travel to beautiful Verona to meet my guest, Chef Andrea Berti, known also as Takeda, who combines the local and seasonal produce and foods of Verona, inspired by traditional recipes, together with Japanese ingredients and traditional cooking techniques. It sounds both intriguing and absolutely delicious, and the sort of food I really love eating myself, so I'm eager to learn more. Buongiorno, Andrea. Thanks so much for being my guest. How are you today?
Oh, very good. Thank you for having me.
It's Carnevale in Verona now, so it's a bit wild outside with going on in the evening.
Well, not yet. We start at about 12 o'clock, 12:30, and they get going, and lots of music, lots of noise, and kids are running everywhere. It's especially a party for kids. Besides, here in Verona, we have a big tradition in San Zeno with the papade gnocco. Gnocco is a gnocchi, yeah. Potato dumplings. And we tend to celebrate quite big in that particular area of the city.
Oh, okay. That's really interesting. Now, Andrea, let's start with your story. Tell me where you're from and how this project, this adventure began.
Well, born and bred in Verona. I started my career as an architect. I studied in Florence, architecture, and then I moved to London in 2000. I enrolled for a master at Centro San Martins, School of Art and Design. And soon after finishing my degree, my master degree, I was enrolled by a company within the Centro San Martins called the Innovation Center. So I worked basically about 10 years within interior design and strategic communication. Then I moved to Italy to work for an Italian company dealing with light, which is probably one of my favorite subjects in design. It's an adventure that lasts 1 year, a great company, but a very difficult boss. And I'm a bit of a, I'm a bit of a character myself. But besides this, 2008, I decided to go solo. And then it was not the greatest time considering the financial crisis that hit worldwide in 2008. I always had a great passion for food, and my father, since I was a little kid, used to take me to fine dining restaurants, so I had the chance to develop a nice palate. I always cooked for friends and family. It's something that I really enjoy doing. It's probably after design, obviously my greatest passion. Then, like I said, there was this particular moment in 2008, and I decided to reinvent myself. So at the age of 38, I entered a professional kitchen as a self-taught chef. I had the opportunity to work in Mayfair, London, for great establishments. So I learned from great masters, including Nobu, which was my inspiration for the kind of cooking that I currently make, which is the combination between Italian and Japanese. It's a sort of Nikkei cuisine, based on this idea of combining different flavors. Besides Italian cuisine and Japanese cuisine, they tend to get along very, very well. We have a difference in ingredients, but I like the fact that Japanese are very disciplined in the preparations and Italians are very creative and crazy. And these two things combine, in my opinion, very well.
That's amazing. That's an amazing story of really how you switch careers completely. But I like that interest in design on the plate, I'm imagining, design in your restaurant space, and how that works together. So that's a very interesting combination. And then, of course, the Japanese influence. You're married to a Japanese. Did you meet in London?
Yeah. Yes.
You met in London. Okay. So your time in London was very influential to you in many ways.
Yes, well, I've always been like Philip Stark, the famous designer, used to say, I'm a bit of a citoyen. So I'm a bit of a citizen of the world. I lived 2 years in Germany and I like to travel a lot. I go to Japan once a year, obviously depending on the possibilities. But I keep myself informed and I keep learning. And the switching of career in reality is not been so traumatic because I keep developing my food in the same way, the same style that I used to develop my design.
Oh, that's really, really interesting. So you offer your services as both a private chef as well as through Kukunochi?
Yes, I redesigned my flat, creating a space which is, again, somewhere in between Italian style and Japanese style. So the flat was designed to be able to host dinner for up to 8 people in a location that can be considered your restaurant, your personal restaurant, private restaurant, where we offer normally 8 course menu between meat or fish or vegetarian. I don't do gladly, but I can do. I don't cook for vegan, unfortunately, but it's an idea that I tend to contrast because I don't agree with the principles at the base of veganism. If I go out in terms like I can say catering, I serve up to 25 sitting down, and I can organize 100 in finger food on location outside. Obviously, I have a team of people that helped me to develop bigger events. We do table service as in a restaurant. We are very keen in offering what Japanese called omotenashi, which is the ability to provide an amazing service without being asked. That's sort of a transparent, invisible serveman or servewoman.
Right. Well, I'm really intrigued by this. It sounds extraordinary and an amazing dining experience. This is called Kukunochi, is that right?
Yes, it's called Kukunochi.
What does that name mean?
Kukunochi in the Shintoism tradition of Japan is the god of trees. Is born from the marriage of earth and sky. And this defines our mission, which is to provide local food in line with seasonality and especially availability. And this is the reason why I tend not to agree with vegans, because I think that the problem is to use what is actually available rather than overproducing. For me, it's always been very important, the impact that human beings have on the planet and then Mother Earth.
Okay. I'm really interested in this fusion of traditional Italian foods from Verona, the foods you would have grown up eating since Verona is your hometown, and how those marry with Japanese ingredients, Japanese cooking techniques, Japanese flavors, or just the Japanese influence. I'm imagining the appearance on the plate as well. So can we talk about maybe way some of the dishes from a Veronese tradition that have been reinterpreted by you?
Yeah, I can give you the perfect example, if I may, which is the tagliata that I make, which is probably my most famous dish. It's been called the best tagliata in Verona. And then it actually really defines the way I redesign a dish which is very common, which is a tagliata, beef tagliata, grilled meat, cut in chunks, served normally with a rocket salad or arugula, like the Americans used to call it. parmesan and normally a citrus dressing. My version is a very nice cut of Garonese Veneta, which is local beef coming from the Lessinia, which is the mountains just around Verona. It's dressed with oil and salt, quickly seared in order to, how do you say, sigillare, to close to close the meat in so that the juices stay nicely inside. It's cut tataki style, which is very thin cut, served like a carpaccio.
Okay.
And then the ingredients of the other ingredients, so the rocket, the parmesan cheese, they are translated in a sauce, which is a rocket-based sauce with a tropea onion, which is the red onion from the south, very nice and sweet. So the combination of the bitterness of the rocket salad together with the sweetness of the onion in a yuzu dressing. Yuzu is a typical Japanese lemon with a very nice juice, but especially very nice skin. And in order to replicate the taste and the roundness of the Parmesan cheese, we add a bit of truffle.
Okay, wow, that sounds incredible. I would love to try that.
It's super simple, but extremely tasty.
Yeah, and I like the way you've taken, as you say, a classic that we all can understand and visualize and remember tasting, and how you've reinterpreted that with these details that really bring a more precise approach to that. Visually, what does that dish look like on a plate?
It's I normally lay down the meat. I try to give a bit of verticality because I don't like flat dishes, and then the sauce is spread on top, and the quantity of sauce needs to be accurate so that it doesn't overpower the taste of the meat.
Okay.
But I like sorry to interrupt you, but I like the what you said about the details, because in reality I work a lot with the details. I can make preparations which are very typical of Veronese cuisine or Italian cuisine, and by adding a few details I can alter without changing. This is a very interesting, always very challenging, because obviously details are more difficult to manage, but they give you a great great satisfaction.
Okay, have you got another example that you could give us of something that we would recognize in the Italian form, but which you have reinterpreted?
Well, I would say since we are a carnival period, and we spoke about the gnocchi with the pastissada. My pastissada is a recipe that I took from probably the best horse meat butcher in Verona. Verona is quite big on horse meat from an historical perspective. I reinterpret again this traditional recipe, which is the recipe of the grandma, of the grandma, of the grandma, etc., etc., etc. I just add a few elements, which is a kombu and sun-dried tomatoes to provide a better roundness. Kombu is seaweed, Japanese seaweed, that normally gives you a nice roundness on the dish.
Umami richness.
Umami,
yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I'm really interested in exploring this philosophy of yours. You've talked about the creativity and the passion and I guess the ebullience of Italian cuisine and a more disciplined approach of Japanese techniques. Can you just explain that a little bit more?
Well, you know, Italy is rich in ingredients, and every region, actually every town has got their particular way to deal with this amazing ingredients and the seasonality of the ingredients. On the other hand, the Japanese, they tend to do the same. They're crazy about food. Now, what I really like is the silence and the precise cuts and then the absolute specific balance when they make a preparation. Whereas for us, it's a little bit more spontaneous and a little bit more, I would say, probably joyful or just just a little bit more crazy. But like I said, it's a precision that I like very much. And to be honest, I think that this is something that I did not really invent myself, but it's obvious checking the Italian the Italian panorama in cuisine, starting with Gualtiero Marchesi, the great master of the Italian cuisine. There is obviously there is an influence from art, and especially this would have not been possible without a trip to Japan. This is something that can be seen also in architecture with the great masters of Le Corbusier, Miss Van der Rohe, and Frank Lloyd Wright.
Okay, that's really, really interesting too.
Italian Wine Podcast. If you think you love wine as much as we do, then give us a like and a follow anywhere you get your pods.
You had to actually master precise techniques in knife work, I imagine, that really would be foreign to an Italian chef.
Absolutely, yes. Starting from the shape of the blade of a Japanese knife compared to European knives, a Japanese knife allows you for the very shape of the blade to produce cuts that European knives cannot produce. It's different the way they cut, the way they use the knife, the way they use hands, and the position of the body. There's a ritual every time you approach food and the preparation of a dish.
Oh, that's really interesting too. Now, you've talked about the Italian sort of joyful approach, a bullient approach to cooking, but also I would say to enjoying and eating food. You know, Italians as well, we all know, can be so very traditional and set in their ways. And, you know, maybe, you know, they don't want some of these traditional dishes changed that much. How are Italians in Verona or from outside of Verona enjoying and appreciating what you do?
That's a very good question. I would say Veronese, typical Veronese, is actually quite close to innovation. This is a bit of a problem. In fact, my typical customer is someone that especially sommelier, people that really appreciate the interpretation. I would say that I came back to Verona because I'm born and bred here, but if I was in Milan, probably I'd be even more successful than what I'm actually here. But my typical customer is someone with a huge interest in food. I don't sell traditional product per se. The beauty is the interpretation and the difference. On the other hand, my cuisine is nice and round, very simple. No strings attached. It's super easy. Normally, you use three ingredients per dish.
Okay, great. Without going through all eight dishes on a signature tasting menu that you would be offering, give us a few more examples of maybe three dishes that you would say are signature dishes when people visit you, just so we can get a clearer idea of your cuisine.
Absolutely. I can give you a fish one, which is astice.
Lobster.
The lobster garden, which I like very much, served with avocado. Again, it's a traditional combination. It's the way it is actually prepared. And a nice, fragrant salad of sprouts. The lobster, obviously, is quickly cooked so that it stays almost raw to preserve the sweetness. Avocado, a bit of citrus to balance with a bit of acidity, and then like I said,
again the yuzu.
Yes, the yuzu, I must say, since it's not so easy to find, I found a nice way to replicate it, but it's very, how to say, you need to taste it, because it's basically yuzu is a combination of lime and lemon. So if you find the correct proportion, you can replicate it in a very interesting way, because the lime is super zesty and the lemon is a good way to balance the acidity. It's not the same, but it gets really, really close. So the only problem that obviously you need to taste the lemon juice and the lime juice before, so that you can make it. You can make it right.
Okay.
And then let me see. Well, we're strong on pasta, and if I can give you another fish dish, again, this time I started from a Japanese tradition, which is the saba, which is mackerel. Mackerel, normally Japanese, they treat it with sugar and salt for about 20 minutes, then they wash it off, and then they dry it nicely, and then they eat it in sushi. That's the typical way that they eat it. What we do is to finish the mackerel by grilling with a torch, grilling the skin, so that when the skin is cooked, it releases the nice omega-3 fattiness onto something that has been treated with a bit of acidity.
Yeah.
We finish it with the sashimi togarashi that we make ourselves. It's a combination of 7 spices, which is a chili-based. The chili that Japanese use is called the takanotsume, and then there's some sesame and other spices, and we found a way to actually make our own using chili, which are not too spicy. Served with something like giardiniera, so pickled vegetables.
Japanese pickles.
Yeah. So Japanese pickles, yeah. Instead of being made.
I like that. Yeah.
Japanese pickles are made with shushitsu, which is sweet vinegar normally used to dress the sushi rice.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, those are really, really interesting dishes. And again, you make me want to sample them. I love the sound of that.
Well, you should come and visit me.
Well, I'm coming to Verona in April, right. So I hope I can.
Consider yourself booked in.
I'd like to turn now to pairing your foods with wines, and in particular with, you're living in a great wine area from all around Verona, wonderful wines. How do the local wines pair with your dishes? What are some of the really great combinations, or perhaps wines from elsewhere in Italy?
Well, to be honest, obviously we come from a region which is extremely rich, and we have great labels and extremely good quality. I don't mind pairing even fish dishes, depending on the fish dish, with a nice red, like a Pinot Noir, maybe served a little bit chilled, not too room temperature. Obviously, for meat dishes, we can span from the classic by Policella Classico up to the Amarone for the more complex. For example, tomorrow I'm cooking for 15 people. I'm doing this beef cheek, and I serve it with a chocolate sauce. For example, they are a good Amarone. A good Amarone would be perfect. I must say, I really like just to go all the way down south. I really like Sicilian wines, especially white wines. I find it probably even sometimes better than ours. They have a different complexity, a good degree of sweetness, and nice roundness.
For example, the Grillo or the Etna Bianco?
L'Etna Bianco, perché no? Sì. Etna Bianco, perché no? Why not?
Okay.
Why not? But they have great selections. I must say that they did an amazing job in revaluing their brand and repositioning themselves over time. 10 years ago, Sicilian wine was probably even unknown to the wider public. Now they're coming very strong. I really, really like it. I lived in Florence for about 10 years, so I have a sweet tooth for also Tuscan wines, and not very prepared on Piemonte. But like I said, we are very lucky here to have extremely great labels, great canteens, great realities. I normally prefer to use canteens which have small numbers in productions, so let's say 20,000 bottles per year, something like that. And then back to my customer, working with dealing with sommelier, normally they bring me extremely interesting things to taste themselves.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So, Andrea, I'm sure our listeners who are located all around the world, and many of whom travel to Verona, will be intrigued by your story and will want to sample your food. So how do they find you? How can they get in touch with you? What's the best way to arrange a meal with you?
Well, you can contact me through my website, of course, which is cucunoci.it, www.cucunoci.it. Otherwise, we have a Facebook profile, which is Cucunoci Experience 1.0. And then, obviously, Instagram, which is our favorite. Instagram, again, Cucunoci, KUKUCHI_IT.
Okay, great.
That's the best way. Obviously, you can get my contact details through there.
Okay.
I'll be happy to reply.
Wonderful. Well, I certainly would love to sample your food next time I'm in Verona. So I hope we can meet perhaps in April.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
Andrea, thank you so much for being my guest today. I've really enjoyed speaking with you. I'm absolutely intrigued and fascinated to sample your food. And I look forward to seeing you soon. Grazie e buona giornata.
Grazie a te, Mario.
Grazie.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ciao. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of Wine, Food and Travel with me, Mark Millen, on Italian Wine Podcast. Please remember to like, share and subscribe right here or wherever you get your pods. Likewise, you can visit us at italianwinepodcast.com. Until next time, chin chin.